So I'm pretty excited. Our guest today is Steve Bellamy, who is the CEO of the Confederation Center of the Arts. And we all may have an idea of what the Confed Center is about, but there's a lot going on there right now. There's some big, exciting changes, and we want to hear a little bit about what this project is and see what we can learn from it. I'm pretty excited. So to give you a little bit of an idea about Steve, Steve Bellamy's lived and worked across Canada in the arts and culture sector in business, music, education, executive administration. And before he was CEO of the Confed Center in Charlottetown, Steve produced more than 200 commercial music albums, including some Juno winners. Congratulations, Steve. And he was also Dean for the School of Creative and Performing Arts at Humber College in Toronto. Steve is super passionate about Canada, civic engagement, the arts, and he strives to build positive, sustainable business models. He's in the middle of the largest rejuvenation project in the history of the Confederation Center. And I want to just say a couple words about the Confed Center, and then we're going to, you know, right over to Steve. As we may know, the Confederation Center was built in 1964 as Canada's national memorial to the Fathers of Confederation. It has grown into a place where people can learn about how our country was formed, how it continues to grow and change, always with the arts at the heart. So, Steve, tell us about this project.
Sure. Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Victoria. The project is multifaceted and very exciting. It's a rejuvenation in a way, and a reconnection in a way. So as you said, the Confederation Center was initially opened in 1964 as Canada's memorial to the founders of the country. And it was meant to be a living memorial. So it should grow and change with the country, and really to celebrate the country through the arts and conversation and exploring what Canada is and how it evolves. So we're very excited about this project because up until recently, about a third of our footprint, and we take up about a full city block in Charlottetown, and up until recently, about a third of our footprint was home to the provincial library and archives in Prince Edward Island. About 7 years ago, they made the decision they needed more space, and they moved across the street. So we're very glad they didn't go far. But they did move across the street, and that left us with an opportunity and to say, well, what should we do in that space? It's a significant sized space, about 30,000 square feet. And so we took to doing a bit of public consultation. We did an internal space needs assessment. We did stakeholder consulting across the country, actually, as well as locally, about what should we do in that space? What's the opportunity? And that feedback that we got from everybody really rolled up into three messages. One of them was the arts training programs at the center are great, but they're not meeting all the needs in the community. So you could do more in terms of arts education. You could do more, particularly in terms of professional development for the arts and culture sector in the Atlantic region. So we heard that loud and clear. The second overriding message was that we should play a bigger role in creating new Canadian content, original shows. And the center's always produced original musical theater. We have had artists in residence in the gallery, but never in a sort of regular and consistent manner. We've done it sporadically. So we heard a message that we should play a larger role in the creation of new work. And the third overriding message we heard was that as Canada's national memorial to the founding of the country, we have in a way been forgotten by the rest of the country in that sense, in that role over the last number of decades, and that we should do more programming that speaks to that national role as a place where the Canadian Confederation is considered, whether we talk about its strengths or its weaknesses or its challenges, that we should more directly visit that topic of Canada and the Confederation in our programming. So these were the three messages: more learning, more creating new work, and more around your identity as a national memorial. And with those three things, the new institute that's going into the former library and archive space will have an arts academy for more learning. It'll have an arts innovation hub for the creation of more Canadian content. And it will have the Canadian Leadership Institute, which is a place dedicated to convening forums, conferences, and conversations about the country. So that was a lot. I'm sorry, but it's a big project.
It's terrific. And you know, I've been thinking about this in preparation for our conversation, how timely this is. You obviously found there was some needs and wanted to respond, had this incredible opportunity with the space and to address a kind of a refresh in a way, if we can call, for the Confed Center Room. But wow, to be having this happen right now when the whole country is having a conversation about our identity, our sovereignty, what does it mean to be Canadian? It's remarkable timing. And I find the Leadership Institute, you know, one often talks about the potential of the Confederation Center being a little bit of like a Banff East, if I can call it that, you know, where there's this center for work to be created, develop Canadian stories, Canadian art, but also Canadian ideas. And I think this is extremely exciting. So how did you go about making the choices? Here you are with this big project. You've got to get a lot of players on board. Who gets to be making the decisions? Like, you got the whole country that's kind of looking at this. How did you go about doing that? And where's the leadership? You're the CEO in beautiful downtown Charlottetown, but you've got a national board. You've got other players. How did you go about doing this?
Well, it's a great question, and it's really all hands on deck. This is really, the center was built through a national effort, which I'll explain in a moment, but this really has been a national effort. So the feedback, we did about 18 months of consultation around what should happen in the space, and we heard from the local community of patrons, of course, of the center, but also visitors from around the world who visit the center, the First Nations, Inuit, and Métis communities. We heard from, as you mentioned, our national board across the country. We heard from all levels of government about the opportunities in front of us. So it was really, and I will say, did a space needs assessment internally, because this wasn't just an opportunity to do something new, but it was an opportunity to address some decades-old issues at the center. You know, we were built in 1964, and as I know our colleagues across the country in similarly aged facilities understand, accessibility wasn't the priority that it should have been back then, and other elements of inclusiveness in terms of architectural design. So we had the opportunity to address some long-standing issues at the center, in terms of the building itself, in terms of our needs for programming, and then also all of this feedback about what would help the center be relevant and meaningful into the next 60 years. And that's, the way we did it, we had advice from everyone. Very blessed to have Murray Sinclair here a few years back before he passed, and he was the winner of the Simons Medal, and he was here giving his take on Confederation and how Canada could have done better, of course, in the way it was set up, but really offered his advice for us going forward. We've had Bob Ray, David Suzuki's been here. We've had a number of people with the Simons Medal that's been running for 20 years. This year we have author Miriam Taves coming next month to receive the medal and give her take on how the country's doing. And, you know, we've also listened to artists that have come through, of course, and the pros and cons of the stage. One of the new features in the Arts Innovation Hub we're building is that we will finally have a theater creation space that is the same size as our main stage in the Sobey Family Theater with wings. So to have a rehearsal space the same size as your theater stage and wings might sound obvious, but wasn't in the original plans. It's quite extraordinary because it's a lot of space, and we're going to have that here. So for the development of new musical theater, such as our show Telltale Harbor, which we're really proud of, a great example of an original work done here and is now commercialized and opening at the Mervish Royal Alex this month. We want to do more of that. We want to create more Canadian stories and more work, and we will now have better facilities to do that. We listened a lot to our arts education community, so the families, the thousands of young people, and young and old people that we welcome into our doors each year for arts education programming, for heritage programming, about what would make a better experience and what are we missing. So it's been a number of years of ongoing conversation. And I will say, with respect to the Leadership Institute, that conversation continues. So we're building on the Simons Medal, which I described. We recently launched the Charlottetown Forum, where we've had conversation around important topics in Canada, everything from truth and reconciliation to the growing economy, to immigration, to climate change, important issues to Canadians right now, healthcare. And we want to build on those programs with further conversation, speaker series, forums, and conferences that are about the things that make Canada stronger. And we've been going across the country asking Canadians what are their most important issues. And it's been a great way to hear directly from communities across Canada, from people in all walks of life, about what do you think Canada should be talking about today. And of course, we're hearing trends in that feedback. There's a lot of concern for everything from, of course, the political division we're seeing and extremism today, to things like the urban-rural divide, things like housing challenges, Western Canadian alienation, the ongoing challenge of Quebec sovereignty, and certainly truth and reconciliation continues to be a priority. So we're hearing from folks what are the important issues that they want to be talking about, and looking forward to working with partners across the country to realize those conversations, to help be a place of national convening, whether it's here in Charlottetown or elsewhere.
Yeah, I find this so inspiring. And to be able to take a look at these very contemporary issues of what is Canada today and what do we look and aspire for Canada to be, and how you put at the arts at the heart. I'm excited, actually, to hear you talking about having a real center for more robust creation of new work. As I think I've told you, my background is in theater and was at the National Arts Center for many years. I did a lot of creation of new work with artists there. It's really exciting, and I just want to congratulate you for that as somebody who's really believed always in the power of storytelling. And I think that this is where what you're trying to do there and how it connects with the country and that power of storytelling is great. Now, I'm a little jealous because I don't live in Charlottetown. Now, we know you have lots of tourism there. And in fact, you've been an example of, beacon for cultural tourism, ever since it was open. But how are you engaging with Canadians like me, who can't get to Charlottetown every year, with this wonderful work that you're doing?
So it's such an important thing, and top of mind for us is how do we better connect with people who aren't here or can't come here? And for the most part, that is, as you might suspect, online, and also by hosting events with partners in other places. So these are the two avenues we're pursuing. We did start with our Simons Medal lecture on the state of Canadian Confederation. We now live cast those, so any Canadian can tune in for free and experience those and participate. The Charlottetown Forum, we're talking about the best technology to use and the way to do that. And we will host purely online events, as many of our colleagues are doing, in terms of easily accessible, not only technically accessible if you can't come to Charlottetown, but those formats, of course, open up a lot more possibilities for who your guests can be, because they can participate from anywhere as well. So it makes scheduling easier. So we're looking at online formats for those leadership and professional development programs. and looking for partners across the country to present in-person things that aren't in Charlottetown.
Yeah, because of course we all know we've lived through a digital an imposed digital environment for a while to know that there's nothing actually better than that in-person experience. It's really exciting that when you have this major expansion, renovation, et cetera, you have an opportunity to put technology, lots of new technology, into the facilities that you might not have had before that would enable some of that. I remember when we did some renovations at the National Arts Center, we were able to do that as well. So, really hope that you're going to be able to rise to, sort of seize the opportunity to be as on top of as much technology, today's technology, as possible. Now, I'm sure you had a number of challenges. This all sounds wonderful, but I'm sure there were some challenges, and you're aiming to open maybe it'll be ready next fall, but you'll do like a grand opening in 27, something like that. So you're still, it's a work in progress. So what are some of the challenges that you've had to face, and how'd you go about overcoming those?
Well, I mean, certainly there's financial challenges to any large project. I will say that I'm very proud of the team for taking the path when we go back 7 years to when we started talking about, when we found out that this space would come available and we would have this opportunity. We could have said, how much money do you think we could raise? What should we do for that amount of money? And we didn't do that. What we did is said, what should this place be? What should happen here? What would be the most meaningful and relevant thing? And then once we had that, a couple of years later, determined, we said, well, how much is that going to cost? And that's how we set our target. And that was $71.5 million was the quote we got once we got to that stage of things. And so we set about to raise that money. And that's a lot of money for anyone to raise. So I will just give tons of kudos to our government partners. The first big partner on board was our former Premier Dennis King, was right to the table. We showed him what we thought the breakdown of the $71 million should be in terms of government participation, and the provincial government of PEI was very supportive, and in fact our premier came with a couple of us to Ottawa to speak to the federal minister of infrastructure, and we had a lot of provincial support right away and got the federal government on board in terms of Infrastructure Canada and the Green and Inclusive Community Buildings Fund. So just those two pieces alone were $45 million between the Green and Inclusive Community Buildings Fund and the province. And we've had another $2.5 million from the Atlantic Canada Opportunities Agency. And the federal government looks like they'll come forward with a little bit more. And we have $5 million from the city of Charlottetown. And that left $16.5 million for us to raise privately. And we're in the middle of that campaign now. That is the Shared Voices campaign to raise $16.5 million to complete the 71.5. And we just crossed the $7 million mark of that. So we have about $9 million left to raise. Still a lot of work to do, but we're optimistic because there's a lot of momentum with the project. And we have some wonderful honorary chairs on board. We have Alan Doyle, Peter Mansbridge, Lloyd Robertson, Cynthia Dale, and we recently welcomed Colonel Chris Hatfield on board as an honorary chair. So lots of support from people that are themselves Canadians who have contributed greatly to this country, and that means a lot. I think one of the other challenges, so there's the financial challenges, which we are working through and overcoming. The other one, of course, is locally we've run into some challenges where we want desperately to support our neighbors, but it's difficult to be next to a construction site or a renovation site. And we have in Charlottetown is, of course, a beautiful historic a tourist attraction itself as a city, as the birthplace of Confederation. And we are right in the heart of downtown. So adjacent to us are some of the loveliest streets in Charlottetown with the most busiest shops and restaurants and so on. And we want to be a good neighbor. So we've done a lot of work to adjust scheduling and access to streets and closures of streets that are necessary for different phases of construction. A lot of work to be supportive of the businesses next door to us and make sure that they are successful and that they are continuing to have a great season as we've just finished and they did.
It's interesting that that local sort of national dynamic that you're walking, you know, I guess every cultural organization has an aspect of that. They've got their local community, how they connect, and then how they are reaching out in one way or another beyond. But I think when you are Canada's National Memorial to Confederation, or in the case of the National Arts Center in Ottawa, you have an extra layer of responsibility. And that dynamic of how the local national come together can actually be exciting, but potentially there's a little bit of tension there too. It's like, who are we here for? And I think, you know, maybe we see that a little bit more here in Ottawa than I think there's probably no doubt in Charlottetown as to why you're there and what you're there for. You've been so, so important to the country. Oh, you're smiling. So maybe.
Yeah, no, I feel that. We all feel that push and pull. Like in one sense, absolutely, there's an immense pride about, I sort of refer to it as that we're Atlantic Canada's national center, you know, where the NAC is maybe Central Canada's national center, Banff is Western Canada's national center, and the Confederation Center is Atlantic Canada's national center. And so just like Banff in its national and international role and leadership role, will often lean into mountain culture in their programming, we likewise often lean into Atlantic culture and Atlantic stories, not exclusively by any means, but certainly if you come to a national center here in the East Coast, you're going to, and should, I believe, get a closer look at maybe Atlantic culture and life as contextualized in the national view. And so while there is immense pride for that here, we also do have that challenge from time to time about the local needs and national needs. And you know, it's it can be challenging, but we're no different than anywhere else, I think, where you're trying to desperately please everybody in your programming, and you're desperately trying to represent everybody in your programming, because it's so important that Canadians, as a very diverse diaspora of people, all need to see ourselves reflected in our cultural institutions. And so accomplishing that is something that we, as many others do, work at very hard and try to accomplish over an arc of time. And I'm really proud of the team here. I mean, the professionals here in our art gallery, in our theater, our arts education, our heritage programs, they are so good at that and so conscientious of it. And really kudos to the team for what they do.
And just remind our listeners that you do have some programming in French as well.
For sure, yeah, we do. Everything in the art gallery is bilingual, so visitors experience everything in both official languages. We have tried to incorporate more Mi'kmaq language into some of the signage and some of the wayfinding here. We're working on that as we speak, doing better at that. And then the Simons Medal and Lecture, our heritage programs, our historic tours, we do offer in French and try to do as much as we can. Of course, we operate in a predominantly English area of Canada, but are proud of our relationship with the local Acadian community here and also the French programming we do more broadly. And we're actually starting an exciting new relationship with the Acadian Society here, and in order to do better and more programming and in partnership with them. So rather than us trying to figure out what programming we should be doing, having the partnership with the community directly, they can say what the stuff is that they're most interested in and help put it on. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. And it sounds like you've had similar relationships with the Mi'kmaq community as well, which is terrific.
Yeah, this summer especially, I mean, we've been for years had great relationships with the Apaguit and Lenox Island First Nations, which are here in PEI. And this summer, for example, we invested heavily in the Creator's Plan, which was an original creation of Richard Pelletier Lush, a local Mi'kmaq artist who has the Mi'kmaq Heritage Actors. And they put on a beautiful show that was an interpretation of the book, The Creator's Plan, which was about Mi'kmaq identity. And it had some great lessons in there for folks and teachings about the culture. And of course, we have Jerry Evans on display in the art gallery right now. And there's always Mi'kmaq programming happening here at the center, for sure.
That's fantastic. So here you are with this enormous project, this great opportunity, something beyond the normal scope of running your center. How did you build the capacity to be able to take on a venture like this?
In the beginning, once it was becoming clear, these three branches of programming that should be in this renovated space, that was the first question we did. And we worked with a consultant to help us do a capacity assessment. And it was particularly around our capacity to fundraise that much. We had to ask ourselves, do we even have the capacity to raise $70 million? We also had to do a capacity assessment on our ability to spend $70 million. To be able to project manage something of that scale, we had to assess whether we had the internal capacity to do that. And that was an incredibly helpful six-month research project that came back with no, you're not ready, and had recommendations which we followed through on. So we took a look at our fundraising and development department, and we reassigned roles, we made changes to how our workflow was, and to that team, expanded it, and likewise in our finance department and our operations department in terms of project execution, made changes to roles, to staff, and built up our capacity to both raise that kind of capital and to spend it responsibly and to be able to manage a program. We're very proud that to date the project is on time and on budget. We're about halfway through, but it's going very well. And you know, kudos to the teams for that. I think that initial research project was a lot of the reason we're able to execute on it.
Yeah, and you probably began with a feasibility study as well, right? Which would have been maybe part of that assessment process, right? To say, yeah. What would it take? And could we do it?
That's right. So I should have more accurately called it a feasibility study, but I guess that's what it was. And, you know, that's not to say we're finished. We still have, while it's on our footprint, this is an expansion of operations for us. So, of course, as a not-for-profit, that means an expansion in operating costs and a necessary expansion in revenue. So we're still working on that balance of identifying all those expanded revenue sources. We've built in earned revenue, of course, into the new expanded programs, but are also asking our funding partners to take part as well, which we have from the beginning said, you know, this investment is both into capital and into the expanded operating of the center so that we can meet these needs.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, what I'm hearing across the country right now in terms of preparing for a program that I lead for the University of New Brunswick and University of Moncton, is that the biggest issue is being able to have that sustainability, operating sustainability. So clearly, this is true for small organizations, of course, but equally true for the larger ones who say, take on something, we're going to expand. How are we going to make sure we really can make it work? Once we open those doors, you know, How are we going to make sure that this is successful? There's so much uncertainty in the world today. You can have a plan in place and then at least something comes along and whoops, we got a surprise. And a lot of them are things cannot control, right? Yeah. So, you know, we were talking the other day and you were saying, gee, you know, I wouldn't mind talking to some people about risk management. Is there, just trying to think of what we all as fellow cultural managers and across the country and consultants and others, what can we learn from the process that you've been through? And maybe you can share that from a bit of a risk management perspective, but what are the key things that you would say we should take away, or that maybe you would even look and say, I wish I'd maybe done this slightly differently. So
sure.
What can you share with us, what we learned from this experience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, respecting the fact that we're barely halfway through, we're not done. So there's still lots of learning left to go. I think so far there's been a lot to learn about, you know, I think the way we started on the project, the way we made decisions about what was to be done, the way we tested our own capacity, like many things where I'm glad about the way we went. I think there's a lot to learn about what we could have done a bit differently. You cannot engage stakeholders early enough, I think. What I wish I'd done, I think for sure, among many things, is re-engage some of those earliest stakeholders as the years went by, because it was 2018 to 2020 that we did a lot of the, you know, we're going to get this space, what should we do in their consultation? And we have all of the feedback from that. But then, of course, COVID hit. And everybody sort of did that thing for a year and a half or 2 years, at least. And then when we came out the other side of it and we were along the way, there was some memory issues with the, you know, we were moving ahead over here and hadn't kept up as well as we could have with some original stakeholders, I think. So we could have kept some people engaged more. And you know, we're doing that now. We're re-engaging people in continuing some of that. But what can people learn? I almost don't feel ready to talk about that yet. I want to get finished first. But you know, I think being okay with slow and building lots of contingency in. And being true to what it should be, rather than just trying to find, you know, how in the arts there's always money for a specific use, and you're always pressured to come up with something to do that fits the funding source. And I think a lesson that is really learned here is do plan what needs to be done, and then go find money that wants to do that thing. I think is something that at least I've taken away from that. It's a renewed faith in that process to say, stay true to what really people are telling you needs to be done, and then you'll find money that matches.
Yeah, and I just listening to this, it sounds to me that it's like get right back true to your mission. What is this organization about? What is it here for? In 2025 and beyond, like to really have it rooted in your raison d'être, your reason for being. And, you know, we can get so caught up in all the, you know, potential this, potential that, opportunity here, opportunity there, to not lose sight of the core, the real reason for being. What you're doing in terms of, if we can call it in a way, reinventing, it's almost like it's not so much reinventing, it's kind of enhancing, I guess. I don't know what word you prefer to use.
Yeah, I really think of us as reconnecting the center with Canadians. We're reconnecting because, you know, I mentioned I would share the origin story of the center very briefly, but in the 1950s, a fellow by the name of Frank McKinnon, who was the principal of Prince of Wales College here in Charlottetown, In the 1950s, he had a vision for a culture center here. He was upset. Prince Edward Island was the only province without a significant-sized art gallery or theater or a large cultural center. And he had just joined the newly formed Canada Council. And so had Eric Harvey, a very successful oil businessman from Alberta. And Eric Harvey was also a collector of art and culture, just a real fan of history and Canadian culture. And the two of these fellows got to know each other. And when Frank MacKinnon shared his vision for a culture center here, they talked about, well, we're only a few years out from 1964, which is the 100-year anniversary of the Charlottetown Conference. So if there's a large culture center in PEI, it could be a monument to that, a national monument to that 1864 conference. And maybe we could raise money to build the thing across the whole country. And they did it. They went province by province, and they got every single province to contribute 15 cents per capita. They got Ottawa to match it. So for 30 cents per Canadian, the Confederation Centre was built as a national memorial, a living memorial to the beginning of the country. And I think it's really important to reflect on that story, that it was built by every Canadian. It was meant for every Canadian. It was opened by the Queen and Lester B. Pearson. And over the decades, you know, we've learned that we've lost touch with Canadians. They recognize some of the things that have been here. Of course, Anne of Green Gables, the musical, is an incredible world record-holding production that we're proud of. But Canadians have forgotten, in a way, what this center was originally for. So I think we've landed on something collectively that is a reconnection of this living memorial in Canada with the rest of the country. And it's the ask is for Canadians to get involved, to look us up again, reconnect with the center, and take part, make use of it.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. It's here is a concrete example of a nation-building enterprise. As the country is right now looking, you know, and the Prime Minister is looking for what are the nation-building that is going to be the infrastructure that we need for the future, I find this a very inspiring story, not just how it got started, but of what you're doing today. So I want to say congratulations to every single one of you. Break a leg, as we say in the theater, you know, to finishing this project. We're watching, we're excited, we're very happy for you, and I cannot wait to get back to Charlottetown.
Thanks, Victoria. The whole team here is very, very excited, and it's I think the other thing that I'll mention about that's been learned here is that it's the thing that's being built here is truly a collective effort on the feedback of all stakeholders, hundreds of people. This is no single person's idea. It's gradually been realized and landed on in a way that I think we all feel really good about, and we're looking forward to opening it and sharing it with everyone.
Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it, and all the best. See you soon.
Thanks.
And that wraps up this edition of At the Mic, Au Micro, a podcast of Arts Consultants Canada. For information on Arts Consultants Canada and our members, please check us out online at artsconsultants.ca. To send us feedback or questions or anything you hear in this podcast series, please email us at podcast@artsconsultants.ca. And you can check out our show notes in the podcast for links mentioned during the program. Thank you so much for joining us at the mic. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on Arts Consultants Canada's YouTube channel, as well as Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Et notez bien que quelques épisodes sont en français. Until next time, thanks for listening. À la prochaine.